Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Lessons Learned Supporting WebSphere Virtual Enterprise. Today's presenter is Abraham Swise. Abraham is part of the WebSphere Extended Deployment Support Team. In this capacity, he is responsible for working with clients to resolve problems they encounter while using WebSphere Virtual Enterprise. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Abraham.
Okay, thank you, Joseph, for that introduction. Again, my name is Abraham Swise, and I'm with the WebSphere Enterprise Level 2 Support Team. And today's presentation, we'll be discussing the lessons learned while supporting virtual enterprise. Let's move to slide 2. Right, here is the agenda. We're going to start off with a brief discussion about what virtual enterprise is. Moving forward, I will be referring to virtual enterprise as VE. My expectation is that majority of the people on this call have an understanding of what VE is, so we won't be spending too much time on that slide. We're going to then briefly discuss why and how this presentation was created. Majority of the presentation then will be discussing the meat of the lesson learned. And then we'll end with avoiding these problems and a brief summary. There is a references section, so everything I discuss during the lessons learned section, there will be links in the references section which give more technical details on how to implement what I discussed during the presentation. Okay, let's move to slide 3. What is VE? I'll give everyone a few seconds to read this information. This is taken straight from the information center, so I'm expecting everyone's already seen this at one point. Okay, let's move to slide 4. The goal of this presentation. My goal is to provide everyone on this call with the knowledge to resolve these problems without having to contact support or open a PMR. This way it can speed time to resolution for these problems so you can get on with your daily work. Okay, let's move to slide 5. The way I compiled the list of the lessons learned or the most common problems is I took an inventory of all the PMRs that we've worked with in the past year. Out of these PMRs, I chose the problems which were resolved through non-defects. So all these resolutions you should be able to resolve without having to apply any iFixes. And out of this list, I chose the top 10 which interested me the most and which had the most reoccurrences. Okay, let's move to slide 6. Now you can probably read this a lot faster than I can read it out to you, so I'll give you a few seconds to go through this list. Now, I'll be going more deeply into each of these topics in the upcoming slides. The way I'm going to discuss this is each topic has two slides associated with it. The first slide, I will be discussing what the component is. Then the following slide, I'll be going more into detail about the lessons learned. Okay, let's move to slide 7 now. Okay, at this point, we're on slide 7, the trusted security proxy or trusted proxy. In a VE environment, when we're routing requests through an on-demand router, customers usually have a web server or a TCP sprayer in front of the on-demand router. When the request comes to the on-demand router, the first thing it's going to look at, or one of the first things it looks at, is the IP address of the incoming request. Now, so the on-demand router doesn't think the IP address of the web server is the actual IP address of the customer or the client making a request. We need to configure the IP address of that web server as a trusted proxy. This way, the on-demand router knows that it sees its IP address, it's the web server and the customer, then it looks in a different area to pull the IP address of the actual requester. Okay, let's move to slide 8 now. Now, the problem here, if customers forget to configure a web server as a trusted proxy. If you have any type of rewrite rules or routing rules configured or any type of service policies based on virtual hosts or IP addresses, there's a good chance they won't work because usually all these rewrite rules and routing rules are based off the incoming IP address or virtual host of the requester. If the trusted proxy isn't used, every request that comes into the ODR, we're going to use the IP address of the web server. Now, this is a main headache because if you're not aware of the trusted proxy or you forget to configure the setting, you're going to spend hours, days, or weeks trying to figure out what the problem is. And when you contact support with these issues, the first question we're always going to ask or should ask is, have you configured the trusted proxy? This may get redundant after a while, but the reason we do it is if we forget, and it's something simple like this, this could be take a very long time to figure out what the problem is. And this is the most annoying and reoccurring problem that we see in support, and some customers actually trip over this several times before it finally sinks in. Okay, let's move to slide 9. The next topic of interest is regarding maintenance mode. Maintenance mode is a feature of VE where administrators can use to place a node or a server into maintenance mode to perform any type of configuration, maintenance, changes they need to make with zero interruption to their users. So this would be transparent to their customers. So you place a server or node in maintenance mode. All incoming requests, new requests, will be routed to other servers within that cluster which are running. And depending on which method of maintenance mode you use, existing requests will keep flowing to that server until they drain, or they will be stopped immediately and routed to other servers within that cluster. Now let's move to slide 10 now. Now, the main problem we have here is if someone or some process places a server in maintenance mode and no one else on the team is aware of this, this can cause headaches. If all the servers in a particular cluster are placed in maintenance mode, you can start seeing 503 responses and you'll get some type of service outage. And if you're not aware of the maintenance mode feature or that someone else placed a server in maintenance mode, you're going to be pulling out your hair, collecting traces to try to figure out what the problem was, because maintenance mode is a feature of VE and the on-demand router will only respect the maintenance mode setting. If you bypass the ODR and hit the application server directly, you will receive a response. So you're going to think that there's a bug with the on-demand router when all it is a configuration option where server was placed in maintenance mode. As I mentioned before, in the references section, I have more details about the different options you have with maintenance mode, as well as instructions on how to place servers or nodes into maintenance mode. Okay, let's move to slide 11 now. Next topic is the plugin generation process. Plugin generation is used by both the WebSphere application server and VE. What we do is we generate a configuration file, which is used by the web server to route traffic either directly to the application servers or directly to the on-demand router. Okay, let's move to slide 12 now. Okay, now with plugin generation, when you install the on-demand router or VE has its own plugin generation process and the application server has its own plugin generation process or procedure. When you use the application server process to generate the plugin configuration, this process pulls information from the application's deployment descriptor, from the cluster XML, and a whole host of other configuration files within the application server environment. Now, when you use the on-demand router plugin generation process, all the information is pulled from the on-demand configuration tree or ODC tree. So we don't directly get the information from the configuration files. First, on-demand configuration process of the VE pulls all this information in memory. And when the plugin configuration file is generated, we pull all that information from the ODC tree. And then, depending on what options you select, the requests will only be routed to the on-demand router, or some requests can be routed to the ODR and backend servers, depending on the options you choose when configuring plugin generation via the ODR. Now, the problem here occurs is when in a VE environment, if you try using the app server plugin generation process, you're going to receive some unexpected exceptions, and these exceptions come from we're trying to pull information from the ODR as though it's an app server. So the plugin generation process tends to fail, and it doesn't contain all the information that you need. So in a VE environment, you should always use the VE plugin generation process. And again, in the references section, I have more information on how this can be accomplished. Okay, let's move to slide number 13. Web server definitions. Now, web server definitions is a function or a feature of the base WebSphere application server. It enables administrators to configure a web server definition on the administrative console. So you can manage your web servers via the admin console. You can map certain applications to that particular web server definition, and that web server definition will use the WebSphere application server plugin generation process to generate a plugin for you and propagate it out to your web servers. Okay, let's move to slide 14. Now, in a VE environment, we do not support this web server definition process. As I mentioned, the web server definition feature of WebSphere application server uses the base plugin generation process, so this can be problematic. Another issue is if you have a web server definition created and you have your applications mapped to that web server definition, when you start up your on-demand router, you're going to start seeing some exceptions, I believe ARFM exceptions, stating that this application is mapped to two different targets. This can have some problems in performance, so we need to make sure that you don't have any web server definitions configured. And if you do, you need to make sure none of your applications are mapped to these web server definitions. The on-demand router handles the plugin generation process, as well as propagating your plugin configuration file to your web servers. Okay, let's move to slide 15, mismatch of installed products. Now, regarding the installed products, first of all, WebSphere Extended Deployment, it's got three separate products, WebSphere Virtual Enterprise, Extreme Scale, which is high transaction caching facility, and Compute Grid, which is used for the Java batch processor. Although these are three different products, they all have some common code. Okay, let's move to slide number 16. Now, the problem here arises with the common code. You have the ability to install all three of these products on the same WebSphere application server. And if you have, let's say if you install Extreme Scale at the 6105 level and you install VE at the 6104 level, due to the common code not matching up, you're going to see unusual exceptions, as well as you may not be able to route requests via the ODR or on-demand router. Now, if you go up to VE6105 or bring Extreme Scale back down to 6104, everything will work fine. And we've run into this problem several times. So at this point, whenever you're going to have multiple products installed on the same target, we require that they be at the same level, if not your environment's just not going to work. Okay, let's move to slide 17. Okay, now we're going to be discussing PMI performance monitoring infrastructure. Again, this is a feature of Base WebSphere, and it's used to monitor the performance of your backend app servers. Let's move to slide 18 now. Now, the problem we have here is customers moving to a VE environment are used to working with PMI. So when they start configuring their on-demand router, they try to enable PMI. PMI isn't supported on the ODR, so it's not going to be there. In a VE environment, we use reports feature or visualization logging to monitor the state of your environment. We do pull information from the PMI infrastructure, but that's all done under the covers via VE, and all that information is propagated to the reports feature or visualization logging feature of VE. Another issue we have here is that some customers do not want to have PMI running in their environment because it has additional CPU burn, so they try to disable PMI. They disable it, they restart their app server, and it's re-enabled automatically. The reason this occurs is there's another feature of VE, the health policies, and one of the health policies is a memory leak detection policy, which enables PMI by default. To disable PMI in your environment, you'd have to first disable that memory leak health policy, then you'd go to your backend servers and disable PMI. If that's not done, you're going to keep spinning your wheels until you open up a PMR call us, then we give you a link to the information center explaining how to accomplish your task. Okay, let's move to slide 19. Okay, here we're going to discuss a feature of VE, the High Availability Deployment Manager. This is a feature which eliminates the single point of failure for your admin console. In an HA environment, you can have multiple administrative consoles, or you can have multiple deployment managers, all for a single cell. Only one deployment manager will be active. The others will be in standby mode, or you can have them stopped. If the primary deployment manager goes down, the standby will take control, and you can continue working business as usual. Okay, let's move to slide 20. Okay, here the main issue we usually see with the HAD manager is configuration problems. The biggest problem we've seen is in the HAD manager environment, the repository has to be saved in a network files share, and we have a minimum level of the protocol which should be used. Got a link in the reference section which gives more details, but if you do not meet the minimum levels, you will see performance issues, and there is the possibility that your repository will become corrupt. Other issue is when configuring your HAD manager, there's an option to also configure SIM, the Centralized Installation Manager. A lot of customers forget to do this. There is a way you can go back and reconfigure it after the fact, but it's more of a nuisance than anything else. Other issue is once you configure the HAD manager, all requests for any scripting requests using the WasAdmin tool or pulling up your admin console, those requests go through the on-demand router, and we've had issues where customers use the wrong ports to access the e-manager. You get unexpected exceptions or failures, and again, that's more of a nuisance than anything else. Once you get the correct ports or figure out what the correct ports are, everything works fine. Also, when starting up in the HAD manager environment, there's a particular startup order you need to follow, or you're going to start seeing some unusual exceptions being logged in your FFDC. First, since all requests flow through the on-demand router fed to the D managers, you need to start your ODR and ODR node agents first. Then you can start your deployment managers. If you do it in the reverse order, again, you're going to see some unusual exceptions being logged. Okay, let's move to slide 21. Here we're going to discuss the centralized installation manager. A centralized installation manager is a feature of VE6.1, which enables customers to manage all their maintenance upgrades via their D manager. So you don't have to check around to all your servers to apply maintenance. You can use your D manager to pull out all the, to pull down all the fixes that you need via an internet connection and push it out to all your backend servers. Saved a lot of time and a lot of headache. Okay, let's move to slide 22. Now, the main problem we have is when VE is in a production environment, your D manager doesn't have internet connection for obvious security reasons, so customers want to know how you manually place their fixes on your D manager and push it out to their backend servers. This information is detailed in the Information Center, and again, a link has been provided in my in the References section. The other issue is customers using VE and Unix and AIX and Linux platforms, we use SSH by default. So for an administrator to push out fixes to their servers, your SSH daemon must be running on all your server nodes. And another issue is if you have your, we've seen this on AIX, if you have different levels of AIX, let's say AIX 5.3 and where your D manager is located and AIX 5.2 where your app server is loaded, there's a different SSH daemons are running. They don't play nice together. So you got to make sure you get the daemons at the same protocol level. So everything works fine. And like I said, more details, detailed instructions are in the references section. Okay, let's move to slide 23. Here we're going to discuss the application placement controller. This is a feature of VE, which allows an administrator to configure their system to automatically start and stop servers within a dynamic cluster based on certain service policies, load, or any type of, or if you see high CPU usage on a server, we can automatically set up another server just to make sure there's no disruption to your service or you meet your particular service level agreements. Now let's move to slide 24. Now, APC, it can automatically start servers up for you. An APC does have a feature or a server timeout parameter where if a particular server doesn't start up within a specified time period, we can place the server in maintenance mode. Problem we have here is a lot of customers weren't aware of this. All their servers end up going into maintenance mode. They had a service outage. They opened up a PMR, and once we explained everything to them, everything worked fine once the servers were taken out of maintenance mode. This feature is enabled by default in VE6100 to 6104. Since this was a major pain point for customers that APC was placing servers in maintenance mode, in VE6105 we changed the behavior. So if you want this feature enabled at APC, can place a server in maintenance mode, it has to add a custom property specifically stating, I want this done. Another issue is the out-of-the-box settings for APC or the default settings are generally not what customers want to use. For example, APC has the option if CPU utilization gets too high, it'll set up another server instance. Our default value is 100%. This way we can make sure that if the customer wants to change this, they have to go in there, make the change, and they'll be aware of the changes that were made and their expectations, so the project will meet their expectations. Another issue, as well as when you install VE and you enable APC controller, as well as other controllers like dynamic workload management and work profile controllers, all run on the node agents. The default heap size of the node agents is 256 MB. This is fine for a pure ND environment. However, this doesn't work for a VE environment. General rule of thumb is to up the max heap size to 1024 MB so it can handle the extra load that APC and the other VE controllers place on the node agents. If this isn't done, you can see your APC controller bouncing around from one node agent to another, and this has the potential of impacting your performance. Okay, let's move to slide 25 now. Here we're going to discuss core groups. Now, core groups is, again, a feature of ND, or WebSphere Application Server, and it's a high availability manager, which VE uses extensively. In a VE environment, we use the core group feature to gather the state of your backend servers and applications. So if a server goes down, core group views are updated, and ODC goes, okay, we can't route traffic to this particular application or to this particular server. Okay, let's move to slide number 26. Now, some of the problems we have here with core groups is they may not be configured correctly, and if this is the case, you will see a performance hit in your environment. So first thing is, for large topology environments, customers like to have, may have like 300, 400, 500 servers within a cell. For each core group, we'd recommend not exceeding 50 members. Now, we've had customers who have over 100 members in their core group, but at any given time, they only have 20 or 25 processes running under the 50 limit. This tends to work, but my general rule of thumb is you should only have 50 members within a core group. Better safe than sorry. This way you can try to eliminate any performance hits. And again, 50 is the maximum. Depending on your network capacity and your applications, 50 may be too much as well. So you're going to need to do a lot of testing to see what the optimal number of members within the core group is for your particular environment. And again, if you go too high, you could see some outages in your environment as well as some instability. So this is one of the most important things you have to consider within your topology. The other thing also, once you have multiple core groups, all the core groups need to be bridged together using a core bridge. Reason is if the ODR isn't, the on-demand router isn't within the same core group as your servers and they ain't bridged together, we will not be able to see those servers and we won't route any requests to those particular servers in foreign core groups. So once you have multiple core groups, they all need to be bridged together. Another issue is once you start manually changing around your core groups, VE has an option to auto-configure your environment so the HA managers run on your node agents. If you have them running on an individual process, which is usually the best option, you need to set a custom property to disable the VE auto configuration process of VE. If not, every time you start up your environment, you're going to go, why isn't it working as I expected? This can be annoying after a while, and once you figure out what the problem was, it makes life a lot easier. Other thing, when we're dealing with VE, they're all usually large topology environments. So once you configure your environment, you should go through the performance tuning document, which is provided in the references section. This way you can make sure your environment is tuned optimally and you get the most for your buck out of VE. Also, when configuring core groups, we do provide a core group script PI, which can take all the hassle out of configuring multiple core groups. And again, that's in the references section. Okay, let's move to slide 27. How to avoid these problems. Well, documentation is everything here. Every time you do something or make any type of configuration changes, document them as well as possible. Create step-by-step instructions on what was done and make sure everyone on your team who does any type of administrative work has access to this information and that everyone on your team is aware of what changes have been made. We've run into problems where one team made some changes to their environment and didn't tell the other team, caused a lot of headaches. SEV1 PMRs were opened up. They wanted to know why there was a service interruption. Once everyone started talking to each other, they discovered what the problem was, and it was fixed. So, again, documentation, and make sure your entire team is aware of any changes that were made to your environment. Okay, let's move to slide number 28. We're at the summary page now. Now, no matter how precautious you are or how many steps you take, you're always going to have someone in your team which may want to take a shortcut, and you could run into one of these problems. And again, to try to resolve these problems, yes, make sure you have processes or procedures in place to try to recover from them. And this goes back to slide 27. Document everything so if a problem does occur, you can solve it before ever having to engage IBM support. And this usually saves a lot of time and headache on your part where you don't have to collect a bunch of traces or have to explain the problem in detail to support. And again, saves a lot of time and headache. Okay, that ends my presentation now.
Thank you, Abraham, for a great presentation. At this point, Danielle, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We'll hear from Darnley Etienne with Cardinal Health.
Hi, Abraham. How are you doing?
Good about yourself.
Doing okay. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the web server definition creation? Because we were just talking about that a few days ago, about how we're going to, you know, create a web server definition and have that work with an on-demand router. So were you saying that the creation of the web server definition via the typical script that the Java console is not supported, or I didn't quite get it.
Correct. In a VE environment, we do not support a web server definition. Instead, I provided a link, but if you go to your servers on-demand routers, mm-hmm. then you select your on-demand router name,
yep.
on-demand router properties, and on-demand router settings.
Yeah.
Here, you'd set your trusted proxy where you're telling the ODR what the web server is. As well, you'd configure your plugin generation, your plugin propagation here. So anytime you need to propagate, anytime there's a configuration change, a new plugin configuration file would be created, and the ODR would propagate that plugin to your web server. Also, we have steps where you can configure how you want the plugin configuration to be created at a cell level, node level, or server level,
mm-hmm.
as well as if you want certain requests to go directly to the app server, there's also that functionality within the on-demand router.
Okay, so just so I clearly understand, so what you're saying is that the default script to create the web server definition isn't supported, but from the admin console perspective, you still go into the admin console, you manually create a web server definition.
Yes, this is done okay. via the ODR, and it's done automatically for you. There's no way for you to manually force the plugin configuration to be created through the scripting facility that the app server has.
Mm-hmm.
The only way in a VE environment to create a new plugin configuration file is to do a configuration change within your environment
mm-hmm.
or to stop and restart your on-demand router.
Okay.
So if you want to force it, that's the only way at this point.
Okay.
And we'll hear from Krishna Fadness with Bank of America.
Hi, Abraham.
Hi, Krishna. How are you doing?
I'm referring to the slide number 20 in the presentation. and I'm looking to understand a little more about need to follow specific startup order for DMGR and OERs. What does that mean? When we recycle environments, most of the times we don't recycle DMGR. We only recycle either JVMs or ODRs. What does that mean with reference to the what I see on that slide?
Okay. Do you have a HADMGR environment set configured?
Yes, that's correct.
What's going to happen is you're going to start seeing some unusual exceptions within your configuration files, within your FFDC, and you may see in the logs that we're trying to access a particular file, which the D manager is trying to access a particular file. For the issue where we're trying to access particular files which don't exist, we did create a fix for that, where you can search WebSphere support site and you should be able to get that particular fix. But in general, rule of thumb is, if you're going to recycle your environment, at least in the 6.105 level, you need to start the ODR first, then your deployment manager. This restriction is going to be removed in the next release of VE, but until now, this is a limitation where if you don't want to see any unusual exceptions being thrown, when you recycle everything, you may have to recycle your D manager at this point. The information I gave was during initial startup.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
We'll hear from Darnley Etienne.
Hi, Abraham. Me again. Question for you. So we were talking about using Central Installation Manager as well, right? So we have a fully federated environment. We have a separate deployment manager for my application servers. And you said that by default, SSH is used to push the fixes or fix packs to the remote nodes. So the question is that if so all of our files are owned by, you know, WASAdmin account in a WASAdmin group. So how would we configure the transfer of those fixes or fix packs from the deployment manager to the nodes if they're owned by a different user? Or is it just that, you know, if the deployment manager is owned by a WASAdmin account or a WASAdmin group, as long as it's peer nodes are owned by the same group, it shouldn't be a problem. And this is as far as like permission, because we thought about, okay, should we, you know, how would this work if it's not running as root and so forth?
Okay, we have this documented in the information center, mm-hmm. and I believe I've posted links in the reference section and how I believe that's addressed in the information center, and the links I provided should provide have more details.
Okay.
And there are currently no further questions.
Thank you, Danielle. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.